For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio. Football Weekly.
Football Weekly Extra with more meaty coverage than Lady Gaga's steak bikini. Today, Champions League. Continental sides wilt in face of brave British teams, with Spurs breathing easier after smoking 20, and United much relieved after having a little pee at the Mestalla. Heck, even Rangers won. We round up all the midweek matches that matter and hear from Sid in Spain. Plus, after Leeds United go from 4-1 up to 6-4 down at Elland Road, we talk Leeds and how to lose them. We look at your posts and we preview the weekend's must-see matches. Sunderland, Man United, Inter, Juventus, Chelsea, Arsenal. All that and more in today's Football Weekly Extra. Super duper. Hello, listeners. Excited and delighted to welcome to the pod today, Paul Doyle.
Hi, James.
Hi, Paul. You've had a busy week. You've been here, there, and indeed.
And here again.
And here again, indeed. Scott Murray back after an extended absence, Scott.
Hello, James.
Hi, Scott.
Hi there.
Yeah, we're going to be talking to you in particular about some sizzling Arsenal-Chelsea matchups of the past.
Yeah, let's hope so.
And James Dart.
Hi, James.
Hi, James. Lovely to see you. Right, Arsenal-Chelsea then. Let's begin there, eh? Because they were both involved in the Champions League midweek. Both had comfortable wins. And they meet at Stamford Bridge on Sunday in the big, big, big game of the weekend. The marquee fixture, you might say, because it's presumably intense. Is that what? I'm not sure if that's what. Anyway, and both teams, although they were defeated in the Premier League last weekend, coming in off victories in the Champions League. Comfortable victories, although not without some controversy in places. What would be the Chelsea winning 2-0 at home to Marseille? Arsenal with the big victory there at Partizan Belgrade. And I guess the big story there would be the fact that Fabianski played instead of Almunia, and he didn't drop any clangers.
Arsenal goalkeeper survives 90 minutes without massive problem shock, really. I think a lot of people are sort of suggesting surely people should be taking Fabianski seriously as an Arsenal number one goalkeeper, but this is 90 minutes. Let's give it a bit more time. Again, Arsenal will be happy to have come out of that with 3 points. Another lovely assist from Jack Wilshere for the opening goal. It was an absolute beauty. And a good result all round.
Everyone seems to be saying that the penalty Arsenal got when Chamakh went down was a clear penalty and there was nothing wrong with it. And I mean, it may be the case that I've got Wolver eyes, but he just seemed to be sort of brushed and then like about...
You've got what, sorry?
Wool, balls of wool.
Oh, wool for eyes.
Sorry, I've been listening to a lot of Ivor Cutler.
Oh, does recently. He talk about having wool for eyes?
Well, he's got... There is a song.
Wool for eyes.
I don't think it's called Wool for Eyes, but anyway.
Right.
But anyway, okay. the point being that Chamakh just took a couple of steps and then went down. Now, it might be that he was impeded in the first place, but I'm beginning to think the referee should just say, well, it would have been a penalty, but you're not having it, because that dive was ludicrous. It was ridiculous. And that would, I guess that would possibly stop players going down so much, actually. You know, they may pick up a booking, but actually if they were, you know, you'd have to wait for the referee to give the decision.
I'm very much feeling you, Scott. It was a controversial round of games for penalties, was it not? I know that you were both all over that Spurs game, which was spot kicks a go-go, was it not? And is this to do with the number of officials that were loitering around the pitch?
I don't know. I think certainly was it the third Spurs penalty was awarded by one of the superfluous officials, rather than the referee. I don't think any of the decisions were correct, but possibly the foul on Gareth Bale, which was the second penalty, but certainly the first and the third penalty, I thought the decisions were wrong. So having more officials didn't get us any closer to accuracy.
It actually means that, I mean, statistically, if you've got three referees rather than one referee
in the
box of five referees, how many we have now, that's... there's more chance of someone making a wrong decision. No one seems to spin it round this way. It's exactly the same with video evidence. If there's someone in the box, they can get it wrong as well.
They're less likely to get it wrong if they can see it more than once.
Well, do you think with one angles. Pundit, perhaps, in the podcast, we'd nail the predictions just that much
surely
more.
The problem with that third penalty was the fact that the referee didn't give it, but the fifth official, whoever it was, gave it from an angle where he couldn't actually see it.
Yeah.
That, I mean, that's the ludicrous thing. He gave it from behind the defender.
Was so this the handball?
Yeah, well, yeah. the elbow, which he couldn't do anything about. It was a shocking decision. But, I mean, there were 13...
I think you were right first time, actually, James.
13 yeah. penalties all around in the 16 games in the Champions League this midweek.
Yeah.
Too many.
They're trying to justify their presence, aren't they, these extra officials?
Mm. It's a video evidence thing, is it, Paul? You're not a fan of video evidence.
Oh, no, I am a fan of video evidence. I think it should be brought in because the authorities have a duty to do everything in their possibility, in their capacity to ensure the right decisions are taken.
Mm. All right. Well, I was going to come on to the Spurs game a bit later on, but we may as well touch on it now. Astonishing performance in many ways, not least from that man, Van der Vaart.
Yeah. Well, I think it's great that Spurs are in the Champions League because they're simply much more entertaining to watch than Villa, Liverpool or Man City would have been. You know, even last night, their tactical approach was, okay, you're going to attack us, we're going to attack you, may the best team win. And it made for a terrifically open and an exciting game. There was Twente's danger man, who everyone knew about, he was their top scorer last season, Brian Ruiz, who played just off the striker in a sort of free role in midfield, and you'd imagine most teams would have detailed someone to try and stifle him, but they didn't. They said, let him do his thing and we'll do our thing and see who wins. So it was great. It's great, great to watch.
4-1, plenty of incident, almost all of it involving Van der Vaart.
Yeah.
Did Harry Redknapp say afterwards that he had a feeling he was going to be sent off?
Yeah, he said he was contemplating substituting him because
he'd got
his yellow card. He then made one rash challenge, which could have got another yellow card. So he was on the verge of doing it when he made yet another
one. It's interesting, isn't it? Because then he's going to be missing, what, one game? Will it be?
He missed the match against Inter, I think.
Right,
it is,
at the San Siro.
Yeah.
All right, and is there a chance as well that Tom Huddleston, whose elbow to a 20 player went unpunished, might get done retroactively?
Well, I didn't see any replays of it, but I saw it in real time. And,
Scott did.
It looked like he just sort of flapped. The guy was fouling him, first of all, and he sort of tried to swat him away, which I think is fair enough, really. It didn't look like he thrust the point of his elbow.
The thing is, it was like a double, there was a double movement, so he went for it once, and as you say, he was being pulled back, but then he really whacked back. And yeah, as you say, he didn't point his elbow. It was a sort of flat arm. It was a good golf swing.
Yeah.
But
Scott's just basically illustrated that with his arm. For anyone who can't see,
there was a small kink in the elbow. You don't want things too straight.
Okay.
He should have been sent off for it. It was clear. He really went for him the second time.
But how much? All right, Huddleston. There's a question mark there. But Van der Vaart definitely missing in the next game, which the amount that he featured in last night's performance is presumably a huge problem for Spurs, isn't it?
Yeah, well, he's very rapidly become a very important player for them, hasn't he? Because he's only just arrived. I mean, they do have a very good squad, so I mean, Modric can revert to the sort of main playmaker role, and he can bring maybe Lennon back into the starting lineup. I mean, so it's not like they're down to bare bones, as Harry has been wont to say in the past. I mean, they've genuine depth in their squad, as indeed we saw last night when they're missing. That was their ninth central defensive partnership in 11 games this season. They've had some terrible injuries, and yet they can still go out and hammer the Dutch champions, which on one level shows the disparity of resources between the English league and the Dutch league, but also shows that Tottenham do have a very strong squad.
All right, well, it was a 20 side that had held the Inter to a 2-2 draw in the previous.
Yeah, they were decent, you know.
Yeah,
everyone's talking about Van der Vaart today, and he did have a fantastic game, two thirds of a game. But I thought the best man was Bale.
Yeah,
by quite a distance. He's almost unplayable when he really gets going. They just haven't a clue what to do with him. He's really powerful. He's quite direct. He doesn't try and do things too fancy or too flash, but what he does incredibly well.
Who do you think got the better deal in their purchases from Southampton? Arsene Wenger buying Theo Walcott or Redknapp with Gareth Bale?
It amazes me now, yeah. I mean, I think just his sheer muscularity as well. He's just really sort of matured both physically and as a player as well. He's just such a fantastic player right now. And as you say, I think if you were to put a price tag on him in the current market, I mean, there'd be few defenders maybe Ashley Cole, but obviously at a much older age now. So in terms of long-term value, Bell would be sky high.
Mm-hmm. Sky high. The only thing about him is he leaves a bit of a vacuum behind, you know, and that is an issue, is it not, the left-back role at Spurs? Against Villa on when is it they're playing, Saturday?
Yeah.
A team with plenty of width and exciting and dynamic players out wide. You're all Brighton, and to an extent Ashley Young, because he comes across a bit, and of course Downing as well, no? Is that something that's going to cause a problem?
If Redknapp feels that he does need to sort of bolster the defensive side of the left-hand flank, then he plays Bale in midfield and Asu Okoto behind him at left-back, as he did last night, actually. But one of the good things, as I say, about Redknapp is often he accepts that risk and he chooses to play on the front foot and, as I say, made the best team win.
All right.
Good to watch.
It is good to watch. Yeah. I'm quite intrigued by the Spurs-Villa clash, and, of course, the renaissance of Emil Heskey under Gerard Houllier, and I'm wondering what he's going to do. No, you know, you giggle, but he's certainly had a big part to play in Villa's last two performances.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do we think? Spurs, easy home win, or are Villa going to provide a surprise?
It'll be a tough game, because Spurs haven't played that well in the league recently. I mean, obviously, they were beating West Ham at the weekend. I thought they were quite fortunate to beat Wolves the previous week when despite his rave reviews, Van der Vaart didn't actually play that well. He had a couple of flashes of inspiration, but also gave the ball away a lot. And Spurs didn't get their passing and fluency at all. They were well smothered by Wolves, who for about 70 minutes were the better team.
Excellent. All right, well, that's a tasty matchup then in the Premier League. Now, I was mentioning that Arsenal-Chelsea business, Chelsea-Arsenal, to give it its proper title, coming up on Sunday. Scott, I believe that you've been cooking up something special for luckyguardian.co.uk readers, a best of six, looking back at classic Chelsea-Arsenal clashes of yore.
Yeah.
Back in the days when the two teams came in very different circumstances.
Well, yeah. Although, one thing, just to sort of annoy a lot of the people on the blog, that tend to say, why isn't this game that was played 6 months ago number one in the list? I've sort of concentrated a bit further back. But something that was interesting about the 1960s was just how useless Arsenal were, which is often forgotten now. And there's one of the games that was in 1966 took a huge kicking from the great John Arlott in the Observer, just accusing Arsenal of playing anti-football, basically. And of course, Chelsea at the time were one of the teams that defined the 60s. But there's also some other stuff. There's a bit about there was one game in the late 70s when Arsenal effectively relegated Chelsea, which the chances of that happening these days are pretty slim. And also an Arsenal-Chelsea match was when Anders Limpar announced himself to the Premier League. So, there's a few bits and bobs.
Do you see Sunday's clashes living up to these illustrious precedents?
Well, I mean, it's been interesting enough the last couple of years. Chelsea have bossed them, I guess. I think they'll probably do so again.
Drogba's back.
And he'll certainly test the strength of that central defence. Vincent Kompany fairly subdued Drogba last week, but I'm not sure whether the Arsenal players can do a similar job. I mean, there was much made earlier in the season when Arsenal won at Blackburn of this new sort of fortitude about them and stronger both physically and mentally. This will be a greater test of that, I'd say.
If you lose 3-2 at home to West Bromwich Albion, it does rather suggest that you might have problems.
It shows how dependent they are on Fabregas. As well.
Yeah, there also seems to be sometimes that Arsenal tend to often play well when they've been sort of well under sort of valued coming into a game, for instance. Nonetheless, I still think Chelsea will win. But I just think that the more that you hype up Arsenal at times, the more they're likely to let you down. When you come into a game like this, I don't know, they might may well surprise here or there. But I fancy Chelsea to squeeze it out.
Chelsea should win, I think, would probably be the accepted view. But why might Arsenal win, if you had to find one reason why they might turn this one?
Well, they could, in theory, get their passing game really going, and their movement is brilliant, and it can, you know, bewitch opponents on occasion.
Can it really, though? I'm never sure about this. I mean, Arsenal are a good side, But there's this narrative that's built up over the last few years that they're this amazing to watch. They pass it around beautifully all the time. I think Chelsea are much more entertaining at the moment. We've just talked about Spurs. Spurs might not be quite as, you know, quite as reliable as Arsenal are at the moment. They're a better side to watch. Arsenal are a one-man show.
Yeah, cool. Chelsea have more diversity, don't they? They can pass it or they can go direct, which Arsenal are almost a little bit one-dimensional. But when they're on form, their movement and passing is good.
There's just one other thing for Chelsea, in that Carlo Ancelotti's dad has just passed away. So he'll be back in Italy for the funeral, I believe, on Saturday, and then flying back on Sunday for the game.
All right.
Right. Okay. Well, that is that clash. Plenty more exciting fixtures to come on the weekend in the Premier League. We'll be addressing some of those later on. But before all of that, in part two, we'll be dialing up our chum Sidlow in Spain and getting the Spanish reaction to Man United's shot 1-0 win at the Mestalla.
Football Weekly Extra on guardian.co.uk.
Sid Lowe kicks part two off. Hi, Sid. You're in Barcelona.
Hi, James. I am, yeah. How are you?
Whereabouts in Barcelona are you? Paint us a picture, Sid.
I can paint you a picture. This is going to be quite a difficult phone call because it's very, very loud. I'm just about across the Diagonal, which, as its name suggests, is a road that runs diagonally all the way through the city. I'm up the top end, not far from the Camp Nou, and I think it might take me about 15 minutes to get across. This is 6 or 7 lanes of traffic.
All right, then. Well, listen, best of luck. I'll
play Human Croaker while I'm talking to you.
Yeah, nice. Frogger is the game I'm thinking of, but, you know...
Frogger, Croaker. I think it was called Croaker on the...
You probably had a knock-off pirate version.
Yeah, I probably did have a knock-off pirate version, I'm afraid, yeah.
Now, you're in Barcelona, heading across the Diagonal to the Camp Nou, because Leo Messi's about to receive a golden boot.
Yes and no. To be honest, I'm not heading to the Camp Nou, and Leo Messi's not about to receive it. He receives it this evening.
Which bit was yes, Sid?
In an old beer factory, would you believe?
Ah.
But yes, he is indeed receiving the golden boot. So I'm here for the kind of, I don't know what you call it, really, presentation ceremony and so on and so forth.
All right, then. And the man in question returning to the Barcelona team last night in the 1-1 draw away to Rubin Kazan. Playing well, can we get a win at Rubin Kazan, said the Spanish press.
That is exactly what the Spanish press says. Brilliant, you've been reading them this morning. There's nothing I can add, James, if you've already read through the papers. Barcelona, there's 3 times now, obviously, that they've played Rubin Kazan, beaten once and drawn with them once last year. They played, I think saying not even playing well would probably be something of an exaggeration. I didn't think they were brilliant, Barcelona, by any means. They did have the vast majority of the ball. It is true that Rubin Kazan lined up in a kind of revolutionary 6-2-2 formation, and basically just waited and waited and waited for their chance. And of course, they got it actually quite early with an almighty screw-up from Victor Valdes, which led to a penalty. And Barcelona weren't particularly impressive, but the positive spin that's been put on it is that actually a draw away in Russia at this stage of the competition really isn't too bad at all. And also bear in mind the fact that, as Jose Mourinho said, rather kind of touchily, some groups in the Champions League look like UEFA Cup groups, and I think he was thinking of Barcelona when he said it.
Yeah, yeah. Mourinho, he's had a lot to say for himself this week. He was in all sorts of trouble, after his press conferences early in the week.
Yeah, he got up and walked out of his press conference before the Auxerre game in France, not least because basically he got very annoyed because of what he thought was an obsession with the Madrid media, with the fact that he left out Pedro León. He was asked once why Pedro León had been left out, and he basically said, well, the coach's decision, end of story. He was asked again, and then there was another question right at the end, and he turned around and said, the way you lot are going on, it's as if Pedro León was Zidane or Maradona or Alfredo Di Stefano, and he's not. And with that, Mourinho got up and walked. He said a couple of other prickly things as well. But what makes this different this time is that, of course, since he started at Real Madrid, Mourinho's wound up a lot of people. This is the first time I think he said something so kind of obviously damaging to one of his own players. Now, of course, if Pedro León plays at the weekend, which actually I expect him to do, and if he plays, well, everyone will say that Mourinho's a genius, that he's, you know, wound him up, that he's kind of pricked at his pride and made him play. But I don't think it was that at all. I think it was just that Mourinho did genuinely get irritated at people having a go at him. And I think this is one of the problems with with a coach that everyone assumes is a genius in everything he says. That, of course, even when he says things that are just focused on anger and nothing else, we all say, oh, no, it's part of a strategy, the same as we do with all the nonsense about mind games of Alex Ferguson. Most of the time, it's not mind games at all. It's just an angry man.
Yeah. Wise words, Sid. Listen, what about the Ozair game, though? Because they kind of got out of jail, didn't they, Real Madrid? With that handball?
Yeah, a little bit they did. There were not very many chances for either side. Probably just about the best chances fell Real Madrid's way, but they weren't very impressive. And then the goal at the end did come from what I thought was a very, very obvious handball initially from Sergio Ramos before I think he played it onto Osil, who then played it onto Di Maria, who scored. Di Maria, who, by the way, had a car crash last night. And Real Madrid's players had a really bad run with car crashes. Karim Benzema had one, Cristiano Ronaldo's had one. And then
another
famously
one.
Last year, and, well, not recently, but has had them. And then famously last year, Royston Drenthe had a car crash. And his explanation for this was he was driving down the road and the sat-nav said to him, turn left, so he did. And he turned left straight into a police car, which makes it even better. So I wonder if Di Maria has maybe borrowed Royston Drenthe's sat-nav. Anyway, he's fine, which is why we can joke about it. Of course, if it had been serious, we wouldn't be joking at all, because we're not that kind of people. But he scored the goal, and it did rescue Madrid to some extent. Perhaps the most interesting thing about it is that Madrid played with three defensive midfielders, and it didn't look good at all.
Yeah, and the Spanish press having a bit of a pop about that, I note as well. Listen, Sid, various other topics we could talk about, not least the fact that the two Milanese sides both had decent results, thanks to, once again, Barcelona, Castos, Ibrahimovic and Eto'o. Has there been
and
any?
So did Spurs, the great thing. So did Spurs, so Rafael van der Vaart. Is he going to be a third
Yeah, but
one?
That's a Real Madrid one. I'm just wondering with Barcelona, the fact that that Ibrahimovic is basically providing all of Milan's offensive threat at the moment, and Eto'o with that hat-trick last night confirming what a brilliant start he's having, with Barcelona not being able to get past a draw at Rubin Kazan. Has there been any kind of questioning there about whether these are two players that they might have wanted to hold on to a bit longer?
Yes and no. Yes, in the case of Samuel Eto'o, and I think looking back, people still think that they can't entirely understand why Guardiola let Samuel Eto'o go, although, of course, at that stage, Guardiola won six titles and everyone was giving him the benefit of the doubt for absolutely everything. I think even now they are, to some extent, or there's one or two cracks and one or two people saying, well, not sure about some of his decisions. As for Ibrahimovic, no one's really saying he should come back. I don't think anyone doubts that he's a very good player, but I think they think that he wasn't the right good player for Barcelona.
Right.
So while it's true that one or two people watched Eto'o get a hat-trick last night and thought this guy should still be at the Camp Nou, the same hasn't been the case with Zlatan.
Okay, how many lanes have you crossed so far?
Well, I've got all the way across the sort of the main road to the other side. I'm sitting by this, I'm leaning against a barrier by the road on the other side, but I've now got to get across another kind of weird junction which looks like it's going to kill me, which is why I've decided not to risk it while I'm talking to you.
All right, no, I think that's exactly the time. What a way to go, eh? Live on the pod.
That would be quite fun, wouldn't it? But
right.
I'd rather leave it for another 40 or 50 years, if you don't mind.
Well, okay. Should we send sandwiches and a blanket or something?
I'll camp out here.
Yeah. Sid, of course, the real thing that we wanted to ask you about was Man United and their historic victory there in Valencia, their first away win in Spain for over 8 years, and a win that puts them top of the group, level with the mighty Rangers, of course.
Yeah, the feeling in Spain, I think one of the things that we have to bear in mind in terms of context is that there is a really genuinely enormous amount of respect for Manchester United in Spain. There's a belief that they are a proper giant of the European game. Whenever teams play against them, everybody takes them seriously. And I know it's a cliche, but it underlines this attitude a little bit. Last night I was on a Spanish program with some other Spanish journalists and so on, and they were all kept saying the same thing. Oh, the badge carries a lot of weight in Europe. Manchester United is Manchester United. Even if Rooney's not there, even if Giggs isn't there, even if Scholes isn't there, it's still Man United. And as I say, that is partly cliched, but it does help to create the atmosphere that surrounds any game with Manchester United. And I think Valencia would have been happy with a draw, not least because it's the Champions League and it's the classic case, isn't it, where there's two teams who are probably stronger than the others and therefore figure that a draw between them is fine. Ultimately, no one was massively impressed with Manchester United. And in that sense, no one's but nor is anyone particularly disappointed with Valencia, because I think they felt that a game where not a lot happened was kind of to be expected to some extent.
All right. Sid, Randall Floyd says, if you're singing on the next pod, can I request This Is a Low by Blur, preferably changing A Low to Sid Low in the process? It could be your own jingle for future pods. This is Sid Low.
Didn't we used to have a jingle?
I
must admit, I can't mentally in my mind picture or mentally think or mentally listen to what that song sounds like.
No? All right, there he goes. This is a love. There you are.
Very good. And see, I don't need to sing when you can do it for me.
Yeah. Van der Vaart next says, Sid, maybe you could sing Carry That Weight by the Beatles, obviously changing the lyrics to Caveat. Caveat Weight. Caveat Weight a long time. Do you know that song, Sid?
I'd quite like to do that with Caveat Weight, but honestly, it's just not a good idea for me to sing.
All right, then. Sid, thank you very much. Best of luck with your further negotiations of the... street life, etc. of Barcelona. What's that? Watch out for Royston Trentha, says James Dart.
I will do, yeah. Turn left. No, not here!
All right, magnificent stuff. Thanks very much, Sid.
My pleasure. Cheerio.
Cheers, then. Sid Lowe in Spain. Very interesting. Lots of other fixtures, of course, in Europe, and we'll be coming on to Man United's trip to Sunderland. Later on, whether that'll have similar car crash properties. But I mentioned Rangers being top of the group. They beat Bursaspor, Scott. Yeah?
Yes.
Could it catch on, this five at the back business?
Well, I mean, it's done them well in Europe before. In the 2000 and... Was it 2008? 2007 UEFA. I think it was 2008 UEFA Cup final, which I lost.
Right.
But, you know, losing a UEFA Cup final is not bad for a Scottish team. And... I mean, it could be. The chances are they're about to lose the next two against Valencia, but they could pick up something at home against both the bigger clubs. You never know; they could scrape through.
Tankopsy, yeah, tweeting that can Rangers qualify? How good are Shakhtar Donetsk as well? Asks Tankopsy, because they had a big 3-0 win yesterday at Braga in Arsenal's group. In other European news, Bayern had a 2-1 win at Basel. Roma just about got past Cluj. Schalke beat Benfica 2-0. Lyon rescuing a little bit of pride for the French side. Pretty dismal week, Paul, for the French clubs. They had a 3-1 win away to Hapoel Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv's goal coming from the goalkeeper Eniyama, the penalty. Yeah, very nice. Copenhagen, P. Warburg says, Oi Jimbo, could you possibly spare a shout-out for FC Copenhagen? With their 2-1 win over Panathinaikos away, FCK are the top of Group D ahead of Barcelona, in pole position to become the first Danish team ever to get past the group stage in the Champions League. How about that? P. Warburg then goes on to ask all sorts of questions about could Copenhagen take a point away from Barcelona? Does the Danish Superliga have quality to sustain two Champions League places, James Dart?
let's not give up all our Danish chat right now. Right, let's save some for another day.
Our Danish special that's very much in the pipeline. Now, in other news... Oh, I mentioned Inter. They had a whopping 4-0 win over Werder Bremen. Eto scoring three, setting up the other, and they look fantastic. And Spurs have got to be worried about that game against the European champions in the next round of Champions League fixtures. Inter, for their part, have to be worried about playing Juventus this weekend in Serie A. Juve now just 3 points behind them. Anyway, we'll be looking forward to the chat there regarding all those exciting fixtures on Monday in a pod that will be up extra early, thanks to me. Very good. Let's move on then, he said, leafing through pages and pages of notes, to posts, which might be an appropriate thing to round off part two with, a couple of posts. Mr. Coffee, he's so frothy, says, I enjoy gauging teams' reactions when one of their players scores. It's true, this is interesting. E.g., whenever Nani scores, half the Man United team just ignore him. Maybe they just don't want to get smothered in brew cream, suggests Mr. Coffey rather unfairly. But it's true, Nick Greaves posting on this. It's fascinating, isn't it? We've had some great frosty ones down the years. Reyes and Henry, Gallis and Touré, Bentner and Adebayor. Is that a topic which excites you, pod team?
Presumably Rio Ferdinand is one of the few players, or would be, when he's on the pitch, who embrace Nani, because Rio Ferdinand has sort of inherited the David Beckham role of being the first on the scene of any celebration to get the optimum photo position.
The sort of Zelig role.
Yeah, yeah, associate himself with success.
I didn't know Rio was playing that game, no?
Yeah, he does. Yeah? He does.
It might just be that the Man United players think that Nani is, as Eamon Dunphy called him last night, a toe rag. So,
right.
That might just be the basis.
What was the basis for Eamon Dunphy's assessment?
Of Dunphy's character assassination last night. It was quite impressive. But I think toe rag and was it a cheat?
I didn't see that.
I think it was a cheat and a toe rag, I believe.
All right.
Why did you say that?
He was just offering a withering pre-match rundown on RTE last night.
Hmm.
It's what he does.
In other posting news, Translated offers the highlights of Man United against West Brom from 1978, which ended 3-5 to the Baggies. Cyril Regis and Laurie Cunningham, pure class. Watch for the comment from Ron Atkinson at the end. This is where he's asked who's the man of the match. He says, oh, one of the cuddled lads up front, which is interesting. Time's gone by, eh? How football's moved on. Well, there you go. As ever, lively debate on the Football Weekly posting boards, guardian.co.uk/footballweekly, the place to go to put your point across. Part 3 is up next with Championship.
Football Weekly Extra with James Richardson.
Championship, so important, doesn't need a definite article, I say. Just Championship, James Dark. Yeah.
Appropriately named.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're referring to the nastiness at the QPR Millwall game, but before we even get there, I want to hear about the madness at Elland Road. And John Parkin, he's a bit portly, isn't he? Preston North End fellow.
Yeah, I'm sure he's heard it once or twice from
the stands.
But yeah. It was spectacular.
Portly but effective.
Yeah, I mean, what, he's got 4-1 down at Leeds United.
Well, Preston North End went 1-0 up at Elland Road.
Through Parkin. But yeah, Leeds run back.
Responded with four unanswered goals.
In the first half. And yeah, ran out 6-4 victors in it. It was a fantastic performance from
Preston. So it was 1-0 to Preston North End. Then it went to 4-1 to Leeds. And then it went to 6-4 to Preston North End.
Spectacular.
What kind of football match was that?
Well, it's not that dissimilar from the Preston game at Burnley for a few weeks back when they lost 4-3. Preston gave up a ludicrous lead in the last few minutes.
Who was their manager?
It's Darren Ferguson.
What has his father got to say about it?
I can't imagine he'd be that fussed.
It's surprising, though, isn't it, eh?
Well, I don't know. I mean, Leeds fans must be used to this. That whole match was like the 1970 season, just squashed into 90 minutes. So, you know, they're used to it. It's fine. Leeds will be okay. They've You know, they've just come up after... However, were they three seasons in Division 3? So, you know, to just be mid-table, right. Just to score on a fair few, they're letting in quite a lot. But, you know, that's all right.
The first game I ever saw in 1984 was a game involving Preston, where they were 4-1 up with 37 minutes left, and they ended up losing 6-4. That was my indoctrination to the game.
Excellent. High scoring. We could make a joke about high scoring. No, let's not do that.
What was the first game you ever saw, James?
I don't know. But I genuinely have no idea. Anyway, you were at Loftus Road on Tuesday. There was a full round of Championship
fixtures. That
was
a bit of a throwback as well, actually.
Yeah,
To the dark days of the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
Because it was a fairly boring game.
0-0. QPR, who were 6 points clear at the top of the Championship, losing their perfect record.
They had averaged 3 goals a game at home until then. And Millwall came and defended in disciplined fashion and had a couple of chances on the break. But it was a stalemate. Off the pitch, however, there was lots of action. And that sort of action that you particularly want to see was just lots of violence.
What kind of thing?
Running battles. It wasn't, when I say it was a throwback to the 80s, it wasn't on the same scale as the 80s because the numbers of people involved were fewer than in the past. But in terms of intensity, outside the ground. Apparently, two pubs around the ground were thrashed. I didn't see that, but that's what some of the reports were saying. But when Millwall fans in particular arrived at the ground, there was just lots of punching and throwing of objects and things. And
darts as well, no?
I think that was at the end of the match when, for some reason, the police decided to, or whoever was responsible, decided to let both sets of fans out through the same exit at the same time. And there was lots of throwing, but I saw bottles and coins, but Stuart told me afterwards that he took a dart out of a QPR fan's chest.
Wow.
And and then outside afterwards, there was some severely drunken Millwall fans fighting with the police, and I saw one absolute oaf punching a police horse.
It
was almost an impressive feat of stupidity, but they're well-trained horses because it didn't flinch, and one copper, because the guy then fell over having delivered his punch.
Right.
And a copper picked him up and put him back on his feet and shooed him away, which I thought, in other circumstances, was quite gallant of the copper. I might have instructed a horse to just trample him.
Yeah. Know? And what were you doing there, Paul?
I'm a football reporter, and I was at the match.
Oh, right.
To write a report on the football match.
Okay, but it sounds quite hairy.
Yeah, well, it was pretty bad, and you know, you go to football matches to watch the football, and there were some people who probably against advice that I would have given, brought their children to the match, and the children were, there was a lot of kids in tears, not understanding why these madmen were going and shouting and throwing things and hitting random passers-by, and it wasn't good. I mean, the police did calm it down eventually, and by the time I left the ground, having done my report 45 minutes later or whatever, there was no sign of any trouble. But it was all very ugly, and not what you want from going to watch a football game.
It just sounds like a scene out of ID. Sort of like where Gumbo gets hit in the eye or sort of thing with a dart. But I think a Millwall fan was claiming to have been hit by a dart as well, sort of nearly punched his lung. And I mean, there'll be sort of claims and counterclaims. I suspect both are going to get hit by the FA.
Well, there were QPR fans throwing stuff at the end. I didn't see any of the darts, as I said, but bottles and stuff. I mean, they were selling beer in the ground as well, which I was in glass bottles.
Well, there was the other thing that Neil Warnock said after the game, that he was amazed it was a midweek 8 o'clock kickoff and instead of a Saturday 11:30 midday kind of kickoff. And you can sort of see his point on that front. But like you said, football fixture computer, it's not exactly the most astute thing in it when it comes to all these things.
Other news from the Tuesday games, I noticed that there's talk of Martin O'Neill returning there to Leicester City after another defeat for Paulo Sousa.
He hasn't had the best of starts there. It's been pretty rocky. I really can't see Martin O'Neill showing up there. Right. I'd be staggered. I mean, the manager is equally hot, his seat is equally toasty right now is Gordon Strachan's, I'd say, who's sort of
Borough.
Yeah, I mean, that sort of experiment, his sort of SPL-led experiment, is complete sort of failure.
Yeah, what were the odds on that? Eh?
Couldn't see that coming. But I mean, there are plenty of other clubs who have got plenty of players from the SPL who are doing much better. So you can't just label on that. I just think Strachan's doing a very poor job there. But yeah, beyond that, as you said, I mean, you mentioned Swansea; they had a very good result at Watford. Sort of going somewhat against the run of form. And it was a very exciting week all round. And in the other divisions, in League 1 and League 2, where you've got Brighton leading the way in League 1 and Port Vale top of the tree in 2.
Portsmouth had their second straight win.
I know. Admittedly, it was only against Bristol City. And the previous one was against Leicester.
I think it's going well on the south coast, because Southampton have got one in a row.
All right,
They're doing quite well too.
Wind of change.
Yeah.
Big bench-clearing brawl at the end of in League One, Peterborough and Notts County. If you haven't seen this, perhaps you should, because you know nobody wants to see this kind of thing in football, but on YouTube, it's terrific, terrific value. Unfortunately, the camera's a little bit slow in panning up to the action, but you've got at least 20 players going at it hammer and tongs.
Are they really going at a hammer?
It's genuine.
Full haymaker.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit of the action is obscured by the fact there are so many players involved. So it's a large swarm of players kind of roaming around the pitch, you know, en masse. Because the game had been quite tasty, the same video clip reveals, with one or two fingers pointed and fists raised after some choice tackles during the match. And then obviously there was a kind of a reckoning at the end, and there were, you know, there were players falling and stuff. It wasn't Ipswich Lazio from the 70s, but it, you know.
Not quite.
Did anyone punch a police horse?
No, again, you know.
There was a game in South America last week where one of the players got bitten on the field by a police dog, though.
Really?
which sort of took it back to, reminded me of the Torquay story where they stayed up on the final day of the season when a police dog ran on the field and bit a Crewe defender. Gave some extra, or no, maybe a Torquay defender, I think, but I might be getting this wrong. But gave extra added time, end of the season, Torquay scored and stayed up in the Football League.
My word, eh?
And the dog was subsequently stuffed and framed in the Playmore boardroom.
Really?
I believe so.
Genuinely?
I believe so.
Well, it'll be hard for the Premier League to live up to that kind of excitement this weekend, but it'll do its best with a series of interesting fixtures, one of which, or two in fact, of which we've already discussed in some depth, the Chelsea-Arsenal clash, and of course Spurs set to with Aston Villa. Other fixtures that you might find interesting? Everton, now bottom at the table at Birmingham. Can you see them turning things around there?
Everton's big problem, because they've been playing quite well, with the exception of that home defeat to Newcastle where they didn't play, has been putting the ball in the net. Even at Fulham last weekend, they absolutely dominated, but they could not put the ball in the net. Saha is injured, obviously. Yakubu, Yakubu, and he can't move very fast. Jermaine Beckford, I don't think, is a Premier League player. And Cahill is on, not fully fit at the moment.
At what stage of the season can we start to worry about Everton?
I don't think you'll have to worry about them being relegated, if that's what you mean.
But the next two games are going to be, they've got Liverpool after this and Spurs after that. I mean, I appreciate we're still very early and they've got too much quality here and there, but at some stage it's going to come into serious, serious heat. And there's going to be a lot of heat around that Liverpool game if they don't get a win at Birmingham, which, as we know, isn't the easiest place to get 3 points for an away team.
No, it's not. But as I say, I think they'll be comfortably in the top half.
All right. Interesting stuff. Wigan are against the Wolves. Stoke, well, this will be a game of finesse, are hosting Blackburn. Sunderland, Man United. Now, what about Sunderland, Man United? United haven't had the Champions League apart. They haven't had the best run of form of late. Rooney is out for a couple of weeks.
I mean, it looks like a draw. I mean, in as much as Manchester United have looked quite average all season. And Sunderland have been not too bad. I mean,
they were unlucky to get a draw.
Yeah, they should have definitely won at Liverpool, who admittedly are just awful at the moment. So I don't know how much that says. But and they were very good against Arsenal at home as well. And I know the goal came late, but they deserved at least a point. I mean, you could make a case that they deserved all three because they were pretty good in the first half of that game, and came off one down.
Real Ferdinand back. And Pat Salona saying another Ferdinand appearance, referring to the Valencia game. Another United clean sheet. Will people stop guffawing about his injuries and recognise the calming influence his presence brings to United's defence? Also, he wants Fergie to play the kids when it truly matters, instead of him, the manager, saying he trusts his squad and then reverting to the early 90s brigade in the big games. Do you think that the likes of Chicharito and who else, Makeda, etc., will be in the field for this clash at the Stadium of Light?
I think he's going to want to shuffle the pack. I mean, they're going to be coming off a midweek trip to Europe, and United's record hasn't been fantastic coming off the back of Champions League games in the last few seasons. It's a tough place to play, and if you've got Darren Bent playing well and showing the kind of form that makes he should be there or thereabouts in an England team with all the current injuries, it's a tough place to go.
Yeah. Certainly is. West Brom, meantime, are hosting Bolton. West Ham against Fulham. West Ham have enjoyed a resurgence in fortunes, and that's the kind of game they might see as very much a winnable match, no? Fulham in the kind of state they're in now.
Yeah, and it's a little bit similar to Everton, so far as they're missing all their strikers at the moment. Dembele, Zamora and Andy Johnson are injured. I mean, they had to bring on Eddie Johnson last weekend, even, which shows how desperate they were. I think Jomanzi Camara might be, well, he is back. I don't know if he's fit enough to start.
But when did he last start a game?
When did he last start a game? Long time ago. Yeah. I mean, he was out with a serious injury. He made a substitute appearance at the weekend, but I don't know if he's ready to start, as I say. So it'll be Clint Dempsey and Zoltan Gerda, one of them leading the line, which they're not most comfortable at doing there.
Fulham's still unbeaten. The only other team other than Man United in the Premier League to be unbeaten, albeit five draws out of six. But yeah, I think Piquion and Abina are a good little pairing for West Ham. They're definitely an upgrade on Carlton Cole, that's for sure. But you mentioned West Brom Bolton. I think that could be the best game of the weekend.
Really? Why is that, James?
At the moment, I really like West Brom and what they're doing there. And Owen Cole's doing a really good job at Bolton. But he's got some really good players at his disposal who can play some good football.
Bolton?
At Bolton and Odin Wingy as well at West Brom.
At West Brom, yeah, interesting.
It'll be 0-0.
On Sunday, Man City... Chelsea beating Man City, will be hosting Newcastle. Tough game to call that one, or not?
Not really.
Not really, Scott. What is your call?
It's going to be City 1-0. Really? The Championship's a lot more interesting than the Premier League, isn't it?
Well, there are those who would say so. What about Liverpool Blackpool? That might be an entertaining match.
Well, yeah, it could be very entertaining for everyone but Liverpool fans.
Do you think the situation's going to get even worse? Blackpool, really?
Have you seen Liverpool play recently? Yeah. I mean, last week their performance against Sunderland was just dreadful. I mean, it was the first goal was fair enough. I don't see why anyone made a noise about that. You probably touched on that already in the last podcast. And you know, they sort of scramble and equalise it, but apart from that, it was Sunderland pinned them back in their own half for the majority of the game. And even when Liverpool have been quite poor in the last few seasons, they haven't been that poor, maybe with the exception of a few games last year. But, I mean, Sunderland really bossed them. And Blackpool are just going to turn up and, you know, very much the cut price Tottenham and just go for it. And, I mean, it's unlikely, but...
Stranger things have happened.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. How right you are, Scott. Very good. Well, that's it for today's Very Much Football Weekly Extra. I hope you enjoyed it and that you will join us when we return on Monday, extra early, remember, for a roundup of all the weekend's fun and indeed games. Many thanks to James Dart, Scott Murray and Paul Doyle and guest producer Jason for today, and you, the listener, for participating. We'll speak to you after the weekend. Have a nice one.
The Guardian.